Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, how are we doing this week? It's Ohio State week.
Yeah, I think that perfectly sums it up. It's the Ohio State game. This is the one that everyone's had circled for quite some time. So I'm just as excited as anybody else.
It's circled before the season even starts. And I'll tell you what, if you are still looking for accommodations either this weekend against Ohio State or the following week for the whiteout, got the answer for you. That is gopsurv.com. This is where the RV is there ready for you. You don't need your own RV. Just drive up with your car. Mark and his crew have the RVs ready and set for you. It's great. You can stay from Friday through Sunday. The RVs are all ready. They have a food shack there. You can get food. They have a pavilion with a great big screen TV to watch other game. And probably the best part, they have a shuttle taking you to and from the game, so you don't have to worry about the hassle of parking. So check them out at gopsurv.com, or you could call at 800-519-8467. All right, Zach, let's take a quick look back at the Wisconsin game. I think a lot of people were concerned about this one going in because it had all of those earmarks, trap game before Ohio State. It was on the road in Madison at night, coming off a bye week, and we know the record with the bye week. Mm-hmm. Were you concerned about this one going into the game?
I was not. And Wisconsin fans who had seen my podcasts and previews leading up to it took offense to the fact that I really didn't have a concern about this game. Penn State is just built differently this year. They are built to win in more ways than one. Even the 2023 team, which was good, they'd only lost to Michigan and Ohio State. But if they faced a team that outmatched them, or if there was a team that was specifically, you know, pass heavy, run heavy, had a really good offensive line, right? Penn State is not in a position where it's boxed in to where it can only win A, B, C. No, they can win the whole alphabet. They can win so many different ways. And Andy Kotelnicki and Tom Allen were a huge part of that, right? The defense. Switching from a 4-3 to a 4-2-5, I know that might say, oh, well, that's just, you know, one different player. That's a whole change schematically. And then what Andy Kotelnicki is able to do with a quarterback, actually his starting quarterback, leaving the game. He doesn't have a starting quarterback for half of the game. And the offense, I don't want to say it looked better, but it looked like nothing had changed. Everything was moving along just fine once Bo Prabula had settled in. So the fact that this Penn State team, it's the talent, it's the coaching, but it's the way that this team is so dynamic that they're never going to be overly matched until they face elite teams like in Ohio State. But I wouldn't even say that they're outmatched, outclassed. There might be some position battles that aren't exactly in their favor, but it's not because, oh, Ohio State's really good at XYZ and Penn State can't handle that. No, Penn State can handle just about anything that that another opponent will throw at them.
Here's what I really appreciate, Zach, about you. We didn't talk about this ahead of time. I literally have the question written out here for you. Is this a different team this year? Because it feels different. And if you could expound on it, but to me, yeah, they can find a way to beat different teams in different ways. And you had said this, again, credit to you, from the very beginning. Andy Kotelnicki doesn't care how he beats you. He just wants to find a way to beat you. And it seems like this offense now has all those different tools to do that in different ways.
I mean, it helps when you just have these players that have been playing college football for a long time. Drew Aller's in his third year. Bo Prabula's in his third year as well. So these are veteran players. You get somebody like Julian Fleming, who's just a student of the game. Sure, he hasn't lived up to maybe his potential, his high school recruiting ranking, but he's still a quality college football player that just understands the game. Tyler Warren, Drew Shelton, right? There's not a lot of rookies or first-time players on offense or defense. The only couple that I can think of are Tony Rojas and Anthony Donko. Everybody else is a veteran, has been playing college football for 3, 4, even 5, 6 years.
and that does make a difference. Now, what they did, there seems to be a trend, though, Zach, where this team starts slow. All year we've been hearing it, and I've said it, okay, can't afford to do that against a team with the talent that an Ohio State has.
Right.
How do you, what do you see as the reason for those slow starts, and does it concern you at all?
I still go back to the fact that it's still two new offensive an offensive and defensive coordinator. You have two new coordinators, two new systems. So as much football as these guys have played and have played together, you still have to build up that chemistry, and you can only do so much in practice. So, Jim, I think we've talked about this on previous episodes, is the fact that it's just trial and error, trial and error, and trial and error. And Penn State, the slower starts aren't as egregious anymore. So that should have been... Julian Fleming doesn't drop that pass. I think it's very safe to say that Penn State maybe leads in the going into halftime at 14-3. Maybe even momentum shifted so far in Penn State's favor that it's 21-3. I really never had any concerns about Wisconsin, and then they punch a touchdown late in the first half. But 20-6 is a lot different than 10-7 on the road. And USC and Wisconsin, I think USC did beat Wisconsin in Los Angeles, so they are better. But those two teams are in the same category when you kind of group all the competition in the Big Ten. Like, they're middle in the pack. They're above average. They're not elite, but they are good. And these games were on the road. So look at how Penn State did close the gap there. They went from a 20-6 deficit on the road to a 10-7 deficit. So the slow starts are still there because they're still figuring themselves out as an offense and a defense, but it's not as bad as I would say.
And I don't want this to sound like I'm making excuses for the team, because these are mistakes that you don't want to have happen. Right. But to me, the first two possessions, Wisconsin, they should have stopped them multiple times. Mm-hmm. There was a third and long that they converted. Fine, got away with it. They stopped them the next series, and what happens is that broken play of the punt, and they get a fluky first down, end up getting 3 points out of it. I felt like Penn State's defense, quote unquote, won that possession, even though they gave up 3 points.
And the fake punt too, right? It's the Julian Fleming drop. You get them in 3rd and 12. That fake punt where the punter just instinctively just knew not to kick it and just had a wide open field. So Jalen Kimber over pursued. It happens, but Penn State was able to overcome that, right? I think Wisconsin's good enough to where any other team makes those mistakes, the Badgers make them pay for it. But Penn State is too deep when it comes to the ways that they can just win football games and overcome these mistakes. Now, again, granted, against better competition, Ohio State, there's really not anybody left on the schedule where that would be in the same category as Ohio State. So then you got to wait for maybe a hypothetical Big Ten championship game against an Oregon, or maybe an Indiana, right? College football's crazy this year. And then eventually the college football playoff. Penn State's in control of its own destiny, so the competition is going to get better. After Ohio State, Penn State fans are just going to have to wait quite some time before Penn State is really challenged that much again.
I think that will be the case. And you pointed out, when Penn State had the ball, their first possession, the Julian Fleming drop, which was egregious. The other thing, and I had mentioned this in earlier shows, Zach, and I don't know if you took note of it, but in that series on second down, I think Catron Allen had the first down, but I needed to rewatch it to see. And sure enough, it was a bad spot, which seems to be just running rampant around college football. For some reasons, officials this year have trouble spotting the ball. I want to get into a little bit the Bo Pribula performance in the second half. It did seem like it was a little slow getting started. Both Bo had a couple mistakes early, and Andy Kotelnicki had to kind of settle into how he was going to handle Bo Pribula. They looked extra conservative early, but once they let Bo throw the ball, I guess he could actually throw the ball, Zach.
I mean, there's something to be said for about finding your groove and getting into your rhythm, right? There were quite a number of people in the Penn State, I'm referring to X Twitter, this is how our season ends. This is it. It's over. It's 2021 all over again. It's like, man, Bo hasn't even ran a drive yet, or he's run one drive, and we're ready to sell this off. It's a 10-7 game. This is a 10-7 game when we're writing this team off immediately. It was the same thing against West Virginia. I think I don't want to speak on behalf of the entire fan base, but I think people are so, I guess, predisposed because it's happened in the past. And it's like, oh, it's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. And it didn't, because Penn State learned from that 2021 moment where Sean Clifford was the only quarterback that they had that was reliable. Taequann Roberson, Christian Veyer, not to disrespect them, you know, they're still making the most out of their college football careers. But at that point in time, they were not capable Power 5 conference quarterbacks. And Penn State looked at that and said, okay, we need to make sure this doesn't happen ever again. So this was a 3-year insurance plan, Jim, to an extent. In that class of 2022, who was in there? Drew Aller and Bo Prabula. So that's the adjacent recruiting class to the 2021 season. So Penn State made sure that it had the ideal quarterback depth. And what's most important is that this group has developed together. Drew Aller and Bo Prabula have developed together. They've worked hard together. They pushed themselves together. And now that chemistry, all those things. So Drew Aller knows Bo Prabula at his best, and Bo Prabula knows Drew Aller at his best, and they know how to get the best out of one another. They know how to push each other. This has been a friendly competition, even though Drew Aller is the better quarterback when both are at 100%. But both are at the best versions of themselves presently as juniors in school. Bo Prabula has the red shirt. That third-year college football players, there are a lot of other college football programs that would love to have Penn State's quarterback situation right now. And it took 3 years to get to this point.
And I think also a difference, Zach, is Bo Prabula's package with he gets in the game, even if Drew Aller is 100%,
yep,
makes a huge difference because it's now not an inexperienced quarterback coming in. Nope. It's a guy who's taken a lot of snaps.
Yeah, and that was the case. Drew Aller was subbing in when Sean Clifford was there. It wasn't to replace him. It wasn't to displace him. It was to say, Sean Clifford's not here forever. This isn't the NFL. We can't keep him as a 10-year veteran quarterback and be the face of the franchise. No, you always need to have a contingency plan. And with the transfer portal and NIL, that really says something. It's not even a congratulations. It really speaks volumes about Bo Prabula to stay, to develop, to know that he is best suited at Penn State, even as the backup. He quietly waited his turn and it had happened. And Bo Prabula and Penn State are better because of it.
Yeah, definitely the case. All right, Zach, that is it for quarter number one. We still have Zach here for another segment. Stick around for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Zach, I'm Jim. It's quarter number two of our show. We're talking Penn State football. Before we get going with quarter number two, Zach, let our listeners know where they could find everything coming from you in your podcast.
Jim, I appreciate that. So wherever you get your podcasts, that's Spotify, that's Apple, anywhere that you get your podcast that you can imagine, Locked On Nittany Lions, and it's also available on YouTube. So if you want to watch the show, I have a video up as well, Monday through Friday, 30-minute podcast every day of the week, and then interviews, reactions, press conferences, and I'm covering football, wrestling, and men's basketball. So all of your favorite Penn State sports teams over at Locked On Nittany Lions.
That is fantastic. Speaking of other sports teams, Friday night, I was in State College for the home opener for the hockey team. If you've not been there, what a great arena. What a great experience. So check it out. Don't know if you folks are hockey folks, but even if you're not, it's a great experience. The student body is really into it. It's a great, great event. All right. I want to pick up with the quarterback conversation, especially going into Ohio State. But I do have to mention, it struck me as funny, Zach, when you were talking about, you know, the college football game. It's not like the NFL where you could have your quarterback for 10 years. It seemed like Sean Clifford was here for almost that, though.
I guess, in fact, he was. He was the six-year face of the franchise in some case. He started for – he was what? He was a four-year captain. That's absolutely unheard of. So circumstances were crazy in that time period of 2020 and then the COVID eligibility. So and Sean took his red shirt too. So he had that full 6 years. And I mean, he was the best quarterback at the time, right? Penn State felt no need to replace him. And the problems that they had were more systematic. They weren't all related to Sean Clifford.
Definitely not. And the interesting thing is it seemed like he was here for a long time and it was 6 years. There's some of these quarterbacks who've been around 8 years, and yeah. I'm not sure how they did it. I know there's red shirt, there's COVID, there's injury red shirt, but it's phenomenal how that happens. All right, Zach, let's talk about this Ohio State game coming up. And the big conversation is Drew Aller. Will he be healthy enough to play? Mm-hmm. How would a Bo Prabhula perform? And this is me not knowing anything at all, except it looked like he was at least cleared to play by the doctors for the second half because he went out and tested it. And I'm assuming that if he felt okay to play, he could have played in that second half. So I'm just using that as my evidence.
Sure.
That if I had to bet, I would think he would be ready to play for the Ohio State game, Zach.
Yeah, the discourse is that, and this is no official reporting of my own, and by the time we finish recording, James Franklin will have his weekly press conference, so I am only speaking out of my opinion and what I know and what other people have said. This looks to be a grade one MCL sprain. For anybody that's curious what's going on, so his left knee looks like it got a bit tangled up, and Drew was able to put pressure on it. He needed a knee brace, but all things considered, Penn State clearly knew, James Franklin knew that he could have won against Wisconsin without Drew Aller, and that was the case. So let's think long term here. You have Ohio State coming up. Bo Prabhula has shown in practice that he's ready and can handle this. This is why you recruited him and why you had him sit and learn for now year three for these kinds of moments. So Bo Prabhula is capable. And I'll take it a step further. If Drew Aller is not as close to 100% as he can be, I have no issues with Penn State starting Bo against Ohio State either. I think regardless, Ohio State's going to be in a tough position because they now have to prepare for two quarterbacks. You mean to tell me James Franklin's going to sit here in the biggest game week of the season in the regular season and go with when he already keeps it close to the vest about any injury possible? He'll say something like, oh, we like the way Drew Aller's progressing, we like the way that Drew Aller has handled this, and then someone will ask, are you willing to commit to a starter? And he'll say, we like the way that Drew Aller, right? He's just going to be very coy about it, and Ohio State has no choice. They can assume that Drew Aller is going to be the starter, they can assume that Drew is going to play the whole game, but what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't? What Bo Prabhula was doing against a pretty solid Wisconsin defense, I'd argue a top 30 defense overall, it was working. So if Ohio State really wants to go full-fledged and prepare for a Drew Aller-led offense, oh, curveball, Andy Kotelnicki can run just as competent as an offense with Bo Prabhula as the starting QB.
Well, what I find interesting, Zach, is I think you are expecting too much from James Franklin. I don't even think he'll say that. And you know what? I've been a critic of his for how he handles injuries. I think he could provide more information than he does. However, with that said, and the reason why I feel that way is I think typically he's not gaining a strategic advantage most of the time. However, with this one and the different styles of play of the two quarterbacks, yeah. If there was ever a time when I would, James, don't say a word. Just yeah. Don't know. How's Drew doing? Don't know.
We'll evaluate him on a day-to-day basis. That's probably what's going to be said, is that we like the way that he's handled it. He's rehabbing well. We'll evaluate him day-to-day leading up to the game, because James is not required, Penn State is not required to put out an injury report until 3 hours before kickoff. So Ohio State is not going to know, but they're going to be chasing ghosts, chasing themselves, chasing their own tails throughout the week, because they might have to spend 50% of practice time and have a defensive game plan drawn up What if Bo does start 100% of the game? And Jim, I think it might be beneficial for Penn State to play because of the injury circumstances, because it's Ohio State to play. But if you want to win this game, Ohio State is the better football team. They have better talent. They have positional group mismatches that I don't like for Penn State, something that they haven't seen all season. I think Penn State's still a really good team, but I think Ohio State is the better football team, and the coaches are comparable. Andy Kolnicki versus Chip Kelly, Jim Knowles versus Tom Allen, right? They're all kind of in the same category, and you and I could just be picking names out of a hat to say who's better and who's not. These are all elite coordinators to this point. So you don't really have a coaching advantage. Will somebody be a better coach on that given Saturday? Yes, but it's almost up to chance at that point. So what I'm getting at is that it might benefit Penn State to be a little more particular with that coaching, with that game plan, with that blueprint, and run a 50-50 two-quarterback system where Bo's playing half of the time and Drew is playing half the time. Take the risk. Take the gamble. It's Ohio State. You still control your own destiny. If it doesn't happen to work, okay, then you scrap it. But I think against the Buckeyes, it actually might benefit them, especially if Drew is not 100%.
I'm glad you brought that up. Well, first of all, for those who don't know, there's, I guess, what do they call it? The active report that comes out 3 hours before the game. And players are listed as either out for the game or questionable. My guess is even 3 hours before the game, Drew Aller's going to be listed as questionable.
Yeah.
You know, and because no matter.
Because he could go, like you said. He could go. He is truly questionable. But they did rule him out, right? The coaching staff, James Franklin, ruled him out effectively for the second half. He was questionable after halftime and then ruled him out. It's going to be the same case here. We're going to see if he can give it a go. We'll see how he practices throughout the week. Nobody is allowed to be near Drew Aller with a 10-foot pole because you don't want him to get banged up even further in practice. So they will make sure that they bubble wrap Drew Aller and protect him throughout the week because that is quarterback one. There is a reason that he is the starter. He is the better quarterback. He is the better field general. He is the better passer. But if Drew happens to be closer to 50% than 100%, I have no issue with Bo Prabula being the full-time starter for Ohio State and for as long as you need him to be for the remainder of the season until Drew is as close to game-playing ability as possible.
And I wouldn't mind if Drew is not 100% having a patent more often that we see Bo Prabula at quarterback.
Sure.
And as an aside, now you mentioned, Zach, and I think we all know that this Ohio State team might be the most talented team in the country. Urban Meyer tells us that. I think if there's any place, maybe at quarterback, they're a little bit vulnerable. Not that their quarterback's not good, but it's not what the standard that Ohio State has had over the last couple seasons. But if you saw Ohio State against Nebraska, they look very vulnerable. It wasn't a case that it was fluky that Nebraska stayed in that game. Looking at the numbers, and in fact, Ohio State really struggled running the ball.
A couple of things. I know that I will look deeper into it, but Ohio State's in the same position where they're not going to disclose outwardly any injuries. They're not going to say, you know, oh, hey, he's not 100%. He's not playing, but injuries to the running back spot, injuries to the key offensive lineman, I think right tackle. I think there might be on their third string right tackle. So, and then there's going to be a safety that's not going to be available for the first half of the game because of a targeting call against Nebraska. The Nebraska game, I'm not putting too much stock into that. I think Nebraska gave them a scare and good for the Cornhuskers, but they were playing this game with the intention of, hey, we have nothing to lose and we can play spoiler. Whereas Ohio State said, we still have Penn State, we still have Michigan down the road. We have to be very careful. We have to be very particular about what we show on game film. So let's dial it back. Let's call a conservative game plan offensively and defensively. And when we need to, we'll pull out all the stops, which they did. They got into crunch time and Ohio State, scored in 60 seconds against Nebraska and took the lead and held on to a 21-17. That's all I needed to see, that basically Ohio State was not trying. They were not trying as hard as they could have. Let's just say that.
Well, Ohio State, you mentioned they still have Penn State. Obviously, they have Michigan. They also have Indiana Zach on the schedule.
And they just played Oregon not too long ago. So Ohio State absolutely is thinking long term. They knew they could beat Nebraska without putting its best game plan together. You need to put your best game plan together to beat Penn State.
And I do think, though, for Ohio State with that loss to Oregon, Ryan Day is feeling a bit of the pressure. Absolutely. He's the one who will have all the pressure on him, not James Franklin, for this game. All right, Zach, we've got 1 minute left. How about giving us a prediction for the game?
This is going to be the first time that I'm going to go on record against Penn State, as people have probably been able to tell from the way I've been talking. I think Ohio State does win this game 27-24. I think anybody that gets to 30 is the clear winner. But, you know, injuries to key spots for Penn State. Ohio State's not the only one dealing with an injury bug. Drew Aller, Nicholas Singleton, denied Dennis Sutton, A.J. Harris.
Anthony Donko,
and K.J. Winston. We know that he is not available. And the guys like Zariah Fisher and Keon Wiley haven't come back. So I just kind of pile that all together. The coaching battle is what, if Penn State is going to win this game, it's going to be up to Andy Kotelnicki and Tom Allen calling the games of their lives. But I think Penn State is just outmatched in key positions like wide receiver. They are not going to be able to cover all three of Carnell Tate, Jeremiah Smith, that true freshman, and Emeka Ebuka. Will Howard's a good quarterback, but those wide receivers are going to be too much for Penn State.
All right, that's fantastic, Zach. Thank you so much, but stick around. We got more to go. We've got Sean Gold coming in, and he's going to make his picks for the weekend. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. Joining me now, Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, how are we doing this week?
Doing good. Excited. Very excited for this weekend, Jim.
I guess that means you're up for that Penn State-Ohio State clash.
Oh, that's right. I cannot wait for this game. We've had it circled on the calendar all season long, and it's here. It's finally here.
It will be exciting. I think all Penn State fans are looking forward to it. It's kind of a weird dynamic for that game this year. I feel like there's more pressure on Ohio State and Ryan Day specifically. And in a way, it's not that Penn State doesn't want to win this game, but it feels like they're playing with house money, doesn't it?
I completely agree. Penn State can afford to lose this game a lot more than Ohio State can. A two-loss Ohio State team after this week would not be good for their playoff hopes, and it's going to be really interesting.
And plus, they still have Indiana and Michigan on their schedule. So it's not like it's gimmies the rest of the way. But we'll start looking ahead next segment, Sean. It's quarter number three, so that means we've got to look at how we did last week. It was the definition of a so-so week. We were both 3-3.
Yeah, you know, a couple of the games, as we'll get into, that some surprised me, some I think we should have known better, but 3-3, at least it's not a losing week. Let's talk about it, fix some things, and get back on the winning ways this week.
Let's do it. Let's start with this Notre Dame Navy game. It was a 12.5 point spread. We both took Navy and of course lost badly on that one. I had the feeling that Navy, with their unique offense, would just give Notre Dame a hard time, at least keep it close, even if Notre Dame would end up winning. This game was not close at all.
Yeah, 14-0 after the end of the first quarter, and you just saw this was going to head downhill. I agree. I thought Navy would be able to play enough defense, run the ball effectively enough to keep this thing close. And, you know, in the end, a lot of credit to Notre Dame. This was not a week where they slipped up. And since, you know, every single week, Notre Dame just seems to be getting a little bit better and a little bit better, and they showed that against Navy.
And that loss to Northern Illinois, at the time, a lot of people were like, that's it, they're done, out of the playoffs. Now, I don't want to use the word lock for anybody or anything, but I don't see Notre Dame losing through the rest of the season. If it's an 11-1 Notre Dame record, they're going to the playoffs, Sean. And their biggest test might be USC at the end of the season.
Yeah, and, you know, USC hasn't always looked great this year. No matter what, if USC is a winless team or an undefeated team, that game is a big game, and it's going to be exciting. Notre Dame will be favored in it, but you can never get too comfortable while going at USC if you're Notre Dame.
And I think you have to remember that USC is a team that beat LSU at the start of the season. They took Penn State in the overtime, and if you're a USC fan, you say they should have won that game. So it's going to be that's going to be a fascinating game. We'll talk about that one when it comes up. Let's stick with our losing ways just a little bit longer here, Sean. Illinois was at Oregon, and the spread was 21.5 points. That spread is what I think struck both of us. And boy, Oregon, I know Oregon has the impressive win over Ohio State, but this was the win that was the most complete. It was 35-3, I believe, at halftime. This was over early, and maybe we have not calculated in that traveling multiple time zones issue, because Illinois on the road at Oregon did not look good at all.
No, they didn't. And you talk about that travel, you know, I never think it's as big of a deal as it's made out to be, but history this year is showing us that it really is a big deal going across two time zones. And I just didn't think that there would be enough time for Oregon to cover this spread with how Illinois plays football. And they covered it, like you said, before halftime, this spread was covered. So another one where it's a lot of credit to Oregon for what they did. I just didn't think the math added up for them to be able to cover this spread, and they proved me very wrong there.
Yes, that was same here. And it's Oregon had a couple close calls early. One of them was against Boise State, who we're finding out is a really good team. So that does it, in fact, starts to look like a good win on their part. And they've just been playing better and better also. They look like a legitimate national champion threat there. The next game up, this one embarrasses me, okay? Missouri, Alabama. You took Alabama. I took Missouri. I've been calling Missouri a fraud since the start of the season, okay? That the ranking was way too high. They're not very good. For some reason, I let the spread scare me. Alabama was at home and favored by 13.5 points. Sean, this was 34-0. You saw it. You picked Alabama in this one.
You know, and I was worried about this one, Jim. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't expect this to happen. I liked Alabama just because you convinced me a bit that Missouri's not that good. And I just kind of thought, like, Alabama's not going to become a three-loss team. But I didn't think it would be a blowout like this. I thought they'd cover by a couple points, not 34-0. It's very embarrassing for Missouri, and everything they've kind of built the past 2 years gets flushed down the toilet in this game because they showed they're not at that level of being a big time program that can compete for a title.
For me, this was the one. I'm embarrassed by the pick. Like I said, I've been saying it all year long. Fraud. They're a fraud. And why in the world did I take them? I don't know, Sean. Bad call on my part. All right, next up was one you and I both got. This was Texas at Vanderbilt. And I think we both believe that Vanderbilt was not given the respect that they deserved. It was an 18.5 point spread. And I know Texas probably had pretty much control of this game, but in the end, it was just a 3-point win, and maybe based on how the game went, it should have been a 10 or even 13-point win for Texas. But that still would have gotten Vanderbilt in under that 18.5 point spread. So good call on both our parts.
Yeah, this is, you know, we talked about it last week. Vanderbilt is a really good program this year, and that's not something that we're used to saying, which is why I think the odds were so, you know, in the favor of Texas heading into this game. But, you know, Vanderbilt just continues to impress, and I'm trying to think after this game, does it say more about Vanderbilt or less about Texas? And I think you can meet in the middle on this one. I think, yeah, Vanderbilt deserves a lot of credit, but it also continues to raise some concerns for the Texas Longhorns.
It really does. And you look at Texas, and I'm not going to use the word fraud with that. I'm not. But I think for a while there, they were the number one team. And I'm just bringing up their schedule right now. And early on, they had the huge win against Michigan, which it was at Michigan. So I'm not going to take anything away from that. Great win, but not quite the win that we thought it was. So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of their season plays out. It could come down to Texas, Texas A&M at the end of the season, last game for either the Southeast Conference championship game or perhaps even a playoff berth could be at stake then. Speaking of Texas A&M, LSU was at Texas A&M, and it was Texas A&M was favored by 2.5 points, and they had a pretty solid 2-touchdown win in this game. I had the Aggies. You had LSU.
Yeah, you know, 17-7 at halftime LSU, and I'm thinking, hey, this is going to be a win for me here. I actually flipped off to some other games because I kind of was like, okay, I feel good about that one. There's some other ones I want to track. And then I flip back in the fourth quarter, and I don't know what happened to LSU. Terrible halftime adjustments, and a ton of credit to Texas A&M. Facing adversity at halftime, and they came out and dominated the second half of this game.
They really did, and I got to be honest, my pick on this one was, boy, it's close. Both teams, I took, even though Texas A&M was giving up 2.5 points as the favorite, I just felt they were the home team. That would be a bigger differentiator than just 3 points. So I went with the Aggies. I really considered that one a toss-up game. So I was fortunate I went the right way on that one. All right, then we had Penn State at Wisconsin. Penn State, a 6.5-point favorite on the road. This was looked at as the trap game for Penn State on the road at Wisconsin at night the week before Ohio State and coming off a bye, which is usually not good news for Penn State. You and I both saw through this. We both took Penn State, and Penn State won it 28-13.
Yeah, another game where, you know, Wisconsin's up 10-7 at halftime and all the media hype is saying upset, upset, upset. I wasn't worried about that at halftime. I had a feeling, I was like, Penn State's okay with where they're at. They haven't busted anything big in this game. And then, you know, Alar goes down, but this team rallied really, really well. And 21-3 from the third quarter on for Penn State in that game was great. A 28-13 win is exactly what the Nittany Lions needed in this game. And now they can go in clear-minded against Ohio State. So I think, you know, we both nailed the read on this one.
We both did, and I know what you mean, feeling still comfortable, because Penn State's been such a good second-half team, feeling comfortable at halftime. And I think early on, I used the first two possessions as my example. Wisconsin got bailed out a couple times in their first possession. A third and long conversion, the pseudo-fake punt, where it actually could have been a disaster for Wisconsin. They end up with a first down and score. Penn State's first possession, their offense looks great. They march right down the field. You have the Julian Fleming egregious drop. Then the fourth and one quarterback sneak, they fumble the snap. And the thing that also hurts, which doesn't get talked about much, actually on second down where they came up just short, Sean, if you watch a replay of that, they actually made the first down. It was a terrible spot on the officials' part. So there were like three wounds there, couple of them self-inflicted against Penn State, or they would have been ahead early, and I think that would have changed the tone of the game. All right, Sean, enough looking back. It's time to look forward. We're going to do that right after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take, and it's quarter number four of our show, which means it's time to make our Pulp Daddy picks. We've got a six-pack of games to look at here, Sean, and a couple of very interesting games this week, and I'm going to start right with the big one. That's Ohio State is at Penn State. The spread has shifted a little bit towards Penn State. It started Penn State a 4.5-point underdog. Everything I'm seeing now, it's at 3.5 points, Sean, and a lot going on here. Penn State with multiple injuries, in particular, Drew Aller in that game last week against Wisconsin.
Yeah, Jim, I can't stress enough how excited I am for Saturday to get here. It's going to be like Christmas morning, waking up knowing I get to watch Penn State, Ohio State, first thing in the morning on the West Coast. Look, all year long, I have thought that Ohio State was probably the most talented team in the country. And even after losing to Oregon, I didn't question that. I thought they still, you know, you play Oregon 10 times, you're going to go 5-5 against them if you're Ohio State and Oregon. And I always thought I would pick Ohio State in this game against Penn State. This really might be the year that Penn State gets past them. I think it's 7 consecutive losses against Ohio State. And I know, you know, since I can remember, I haven't seen very many Penn State victories over Ohio State. After watching both teams last week and after analyzing college football this entire season, this really might be the year that Penn State can get past them. That stadium is going to be rocking, and I'm going to go with Penn State plus 3.5. I think there can be some magic in the air for Penn State to get past Ohio State this year.
Wow. What's interesting, Sean, and maybe we're just spending too much time together. I thought all along, all season, that this would be a loss for Penn State. Until they show me they could get over this hump, I would take Ohio State. It's hard for me to do that. It's hard for me to say those words. And I think Penn State has showed me enough with this team on offense. They seem to find a way. In the last couple of years, their losses to Michigan and Ohio State, the defense has been good enough, but the offense has not. I just feel like this one is different. This offense for Penn State is different. They will find a way. Even against Wisconsin, where they lose their starter, Drew Aller, who was playing really well in the first half of that game, they have Bo Prabula in, and they still found a way. Now, you're going to hear talk. It's already been out there. Might they actually be better off with Bo Prabula and his running threat? I don't know if that's the case, but I suspect even if Drew Aller is healthy, we're going to see more Bo Prabula than we normally do. That, you know, James Franklin and Andy Kotelnicki is going to make that Ohio State defense be prepared for everything. I'm going to go with you, partly with my heart, but I'm going to go with the Nittany Lions. And this is also after watching that Ohio State team play against Nebraska, not looking very good. The offensive line had issues. They couldn't run the ball. This is not, at least watching them last week, this is not the Buckeye team that I think a lot of us assumed we were going to get. So we're both down in the win column for the Nittany Lions, or at least cover the spread. So Keep your fingers crossed for that one. Next up, Duke at Miami. This is our old friend Manny Diaz with Duke, with the Miami Hurricanes. Miami is undefeated. They escaped in a couple different games. It is at Miami, and Miami's a 20-point favorite in this one.
You know, for this game, Miami has just played in too many close games this season. I think they win this game, but they finally cracked the top five, and I can see this being a little bit of a letdown spot for them. I hope for Miami's sake it's not, because it's been a great story and they're a really fun team to watch. But when I look at the schedule and I look at games that really kind of scare me this week, Miami is on that list of, you know, a team that finally has gotten into this top five ranking and could blow it right now. So I think Miami's a much better team than Duke, and I think they'll win this game, but I'm going to take Duke plus 20. It's too many points for me.
I'm with you on this one. I'm taking Duke 20 points. Miami's gotten away with several games, just escaping. Not going to say they're not going to escape again, but like you said, that 20 points just feels like too many points, that Duke will find a way to just hang in there. Maybe it's reduced the number of possessions in this game. Hey, a week ago I was saying the exact same words for Illinois, but maybe this week I'll be right. All right, next up, Oregon is at Michigan. Boy, how times have changed. Prior to the season, I think I saw somewhere before the season, one of those early spread games, it was like a 3-point spread. Right now, it's Oregon is favored by more than 2 touchdowns. It's 14.5 points at Ann Arbor, Sean.
Yeah, this is a, you know, looking from week one till now, this is a crazy spread to be talking about, but it's justified too from what both of these teams have done. Oregon handling Illinois 38-9 showed me a lot. And I know this game is at Michigan, a hard place to play, but I think it's crazy that Illinois was a 20-point underdog against the Oregon Ducks, and Michigan is only a 14.5-point underdog. I don't think Michigan's offense is great still, and I really like what I'm seeing from Oregon's defense. So Oregon's a really good team, and it's a big environment, but I think they cover the spread. I think they're legit.
You know, it's been so crazy this season, some of the upsets and all. Michigan at home. Finally, Sean, I'm going to buy into that 2 time zone traveling, okay? So I'm going to take the Wolverines in this one to at least make it competitive. I could still see this being, you know, a 10-13-point game for Oregon. If that happens, I win with the Wolverines. I'm going to take Michigan in this one. And that spread, again, I've said it a lot, but I'm going to take the underdog Wolverines in this one. All right, next up is Florida at Georgia. Now, Florida has the absolute nasty, nasty schedule. They've actually won a few games, been playing a bit better. This one is at Georgia, and Georgia is a 16.5-point favorite.
I don't love this spread being that big, but I do think we're back to seeing the Georgia Bulldogs we saw early in the season. And as you mentioned, Florida's gotten through their schedule okay. It did not look good at the start of the season, but they've kind of rebounded and they've played some good competitive football lately. But give me the Georgia Bulldogs for a statement win here. I know they have one loss, but they're trying to show that they're good enough to still be the number one ranked team in the country. And I think this is a huge opportunity for them to do that. I think they go in and Kirby Smart coaches a great game. And we see the Georgia Bulldogs that we had early in the season where they kind of just steamroll past people.
You know, I've been going with the underdogs here. My first 3 picks were all the underdogs. When I see that big spread and it's a crazy season. However, these are the Georgia Bulldogs. I think this is a bit of a rivalry game. They're at home. I think Georgia is going to flex their muscles, and Florida, just we realize that they are not there yet, and this is the first of several losses for this gauntlet that they are on. They go from Georgia, they go to Austin to play Texas, they then at home have LSU, at home with Ole Miss. That's a gauntlet that is just too much. And I think it starts with this one. I'm taking the Georgia Bulldogs also in this one. Next up, here's an interesting one. Pitt at SMU. The undefeated Pitt Panthers at SMU. SMU, though, is the 7.5-point favorite. What are you seeing in this one, Sean?
In this game, I'm asking myself, what did Pitt do to deserve to be more than a touchdown underdog? They've done nothing but win this season, and I know, you know, not all of their games have been blowouts. They've had some scares. Cal almost got them. But when I look at SMU, I mean, they only beat Duke by 1 point last week. So it's not like SMU has been this gauntlet and just steamrolling over opponents. So I think I get why SMU is a favorite in this game at home, but Pitt's a good program, and they know that there's a ton at stake for them in this game. So I'm going to go with Pitt plus 7.5. I think they can win this game. I'm not going to say they're going to win this game, but they have the potential to win this game, right? And because of that, I'm not going to take them, you know, to lose by more than 7 points in this game.
I hate that half point, Sean. I hate it, hate it, hate it. But it is at SMU. There's some question marks around Pitt's quarterback, if he'll be playing or not. I'm going to go with SMU in this one. Pitt has been undefeated, but as you mentioned, they just got past Cal. They had a big comeback, I believe, against West Virginia to win that one. I'm thinking, you know what? The clock's going to strike midnight. I'm going with SMU in this one. All right, that brings us to Louisville at Clemson. Clemson, after getting absolutely destroyed in the season opener against Georgia, they've been steamrolling everybody. Louisville, we thought, might be a better team than what they've shown, but Clemson is my most recent is has them as a 10.5-point favorite, down from 11.5.
Could this be one of these upsets that we get this weekend? We know how good Clemson's been playing recently, but I saw a couple of things on how they're still a pretty overrated team and really not that good. I'm going to disagree with some of those things I saw, though. Dabo Swinney, whether you love him or hate him, is a great coach, and he is still one of the best coaches in the country, in my opinion. He gets a lot of hate, but not every year you're going to have Trevor Lawrence, the top quarterback prospect ever coming out of high school, leading your program. They had some growing pains after Trevor Lawrence, and they're getting up to speed again right now. So I think he's turned the corner with this team, and there's so much at stake for Clemson in this game. And when I look at the matchup, I just don't think that Dabo Swinney is going to let anything happen in this matchup. So I think Clemson's going to continue to roll. This might be a game where it's pretty close at halftime, but I see Clemson taking off in the second half and putting Louisville away and covering a big spread.
I have Clemson also in this one for a couple reasons. I think they're the better team. They are at home. They've been rolling over people, and they still have something to prove. That Georgia shellacking early in the season still hangs over their head. I think every game they feel they don't just want to win. They need to win by a lot. They need to prove that they do belong. I'm going with Clemson in this one, despite the 10.5-point spread. All right, Sean, that's it for our picks. As always, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.